What?
College matters.
What?
College matters. Matters.
Really?
For sure. College matters.
Alma matters. Matters.
Like always, things are unpredictable and changing from year to year. Some of the kind of high level things that I think I saw and that our kids navigated were around some of these kind of big uncertainties in higher education and in admission offices.
That is Tyler Sant, head of college counseling at Atlanta International School in Georgia. Hello, I'm your host, Venkat Raman. The 2022-23 college application season is in the books. It's a good time to look back and learn from that experience for the benefit of the next set of high school seniors and parents. And who better to help us than the college counselors who guided the current set of graduating seniors through the college process. I talked to six high school college counselors from across the US to put together this episode. They are Tyler Sant of Atlanta International School, Sean Kennedy of Ravenscroft High School, Bill Hancock of Cranbrook Kingswood Upper School, Colin Copez of Dowling Catholic High School, Tom Stepkowski of West Hill High School in Connecticut, and Shweta Bagada, a private counselor in the Silicon Valley, California. I have organized the discussion in the following manner: takeaways, how to tackle early applications, scholarships, popular majors, and advice for students and parents. Now, let's get right to it. Here is Tyler Sant, head of college counseling at Atlanta International School in Georgia, sharing his overall learnings from the application season.
And so seeing growing numbers of applications, but not necessarily growing numbers of students to go around. Seeing places that have more applications early and as a result are deferring more students than we've seen in previous years. And some places are looking more closely at demonstrated interest to try and remove on the institutional side the uncertainty that comes with having more applications and trying to deal with, in some cases, reading those additional applications with understaffed offices. We've heard from a number of admission offices that haven't totally gotten back up to full staffing from COVID, and at the same time as that are dealing with increases of 20, 30, 40% in applications. So you don't have additional people to read those additional files, and in some cases you have fewer people than you had before. And then the other thing that I think is sort of interesting to keep tracking is the impact of test optional and kind of the inconsistent application of being test optional across universities. Really not totally consistent across even kind of peer sets of schools. And so that's been a sort of tricky thing to navigate. At the same time that, you know, as tends to happen, the most selective schools continue to get more selective and get most attention and also have significant application growth.
Here is Sean Kennedy, co-director of college counseling at Ravenscroft High School in Raleigh, North Carolina, sharing his learnings about public university applications and admissions.
I think some of the things that proved to be a little bit more unexpected were there was a really significant rise in interest in public universities. You know, as a counselor in the southeastern part of the United States, we saw really significant changes in application volume and selectivity among southeastern public universities. And not simply those that are normally selective, but even a much wider variety of that grouping that there was just a lot more interest in, and their volumes went up. their application rates went down, and students that maybe even a year ago might have been admitted might not have been this year. So wow. that was unexpected. And I heard that from a lot of colleagues in, you know, in other institutions, not only within the Southeast, but, you know, around the country, who had students that were applying into our region of the country. We did see some slightly better outcomes among highly selective schools for students that applied regular decision, which was a pleasant surprise that some places maybe historically when there was, you know, tepid optimism about applying, about waiting to apply to regular decision instead of the early round, that, you know, we saw some things tip positively for students, which was nice. Mm-hmm.
Here is Shweta Bagade, private college counselor in Silicon Valley, California, sharing her learnings from UC admissions.
And the UCs have gotten even crazier. You have 4.0 students who are getting rejected by all the UCs. And that's just because there's just not enough space. Mm-hmm. There's so many well-qualified students. The universities need diversity, so they can't take every 4.0 plus student who's qualified. They just can't. And so, otherwise they wouldn't be diverse, and they'd probably still be rejecting students. And schools that they thought they could get into, they're getting waitlisted or outright not being getting an offer. So it's really about embracing alternatives and looking at these programs that are available out there. And it's important for especially a lot of the STEM focused students to look at the admit rate for STEM programs, even for admission rates where they're hovering the 50-60%. Can be in the single digits for a lot of engineering and CS. So it's important to understand that if you're thinking about these super competitive programs for like nursing, engineering, computer science, a lot of biology programs are very selective as well. Mm-hmm. Look at those specific admit rates and ask those questions as you're doing your research.
Here is Tom Stepkowski, counselor at West Hill High School in Connecticut, talking about early applications.
It's become almost routine now. And this year, more than ever, I had a lot of my personal students on my caseload just do early decision. It wasn't even a discussion. It was just, I'm doing early decision. And if I don't get in, then obviously I'm just going to do early action. So I really didn't have to explain so much this year. The difference between an early decision, early action application, it was more, you know, we know what it is, but this is how we're going to do it. Probably not going to be accepted because, you know, you're going into a pool of candidates that, you know, the pool is just so much bigger. And it used to be where if you really wanted to get into a school, you had a much better shot of getting into a school going early decision. So that for us and our whole staff, you know, because I actually asked a couple of them, you know, I said, what do you think has been our biggest takeaway? And we just saw that coming. And we just this year, it just seemed like it really, really exploded.
Here is Colleen Coppes, college and career coordinator at Dowling Catholic High School in Des Moines, Iowa, talking about early applications.
Some big themes that I saw from our particular high school is that many of our students who applied early action or early decision to more of the selective institutions this year, if they were not outright admitted through those application types, I saw more of a trend this year that they were waitlisted and moved to the regular decision pool versus being denied outright. So that was a shift from last year's class where majority of our students got a decision immediately after the early action decisions were released and they knew, okay, I can move on to my second or third choice in the regular decision pool. And then that inevitably had our students really rushing to May 1st with making their decisions. I felt like more this year than mm-hmm. last year. Mm-hmm. So that was a trend that I saw from our early action pool.
Here is Sean Kennedy, co-director of college counseling at Ravenscroft High School, Raleigh, North Carolina, talking about alternate admissions offers.
I think we saw an increase in alternate admission offers. So rather than the traditional fall, you know, fall full admission, it might be global year admission or January or spring admit start or special program opportunities or delayed transfer guarantees, that we see more of those coming as possible outcomes for students instead of the admit waitlisted I and for the fall exclusively. So it suggests that they're, I think, looking very differently about how they will take a group of applicants and look at their, not just their enrollment needs for the fall, but also fall while anticipating and looking ahead to spring and other programs that they're hosting.
Here is Colleen Copes, College and Career Coordinator at Dowling Catholic High School, Des Moines, Iowa, talking about financial aid applications.
Also, another interesting theme that I saw from this year's class was that roughly half of our families completed the free application for federal student aid, whereas mm-hmm. last year in 2022, about 60%, so we were down from last year. A common trend that I saw was that many of our families were assuming that, okay, it wouldn't be advantageous for them to complete the free application for federal student aid as they thought maybe they would not qualify for aid. Yeah. So that was an interesting finding, and I'm curious to see what the changes coming with yeah. FAFSA and the delay coming out in December, if that will impact our amount of students and families applying mm-hmm. for aid mm-hmm. next year. I also, in terms of like a theme, even though I've been in my position for 2 years, I did see a slight uptick in students either going into the workforce or taking a gap year before attending college than in the previous year. So wow. Those are kind of like the big themes from our school in particular.
Here is Bill Hancock, Senior Associate Dean of College Counseling at Cranbrook Kingswood Upper School in Michigan, talking about the consequences of applying early.
Some schools have moved to the possibility of offering early decision two, a second wave of that.
Right.
So, you know, students and families and counselors have to think through, you know, if all of this is out there, how do I fit in?
You know? Absolutely. You
know, what am I looking for? Am I ready to make that kind of commitment? Do I have the financial resources to say to a school, if accepted, I will go?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. I think those are real challenges and difficult things to say, particularly if a student is a first gen student or is a school where the college going culture is maybe not, you know, as predominant as it is in my school, for instance. So, you know, in those instances, that child may start their process a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And if they start a little bit later, you know, are they going to be ready, you know, to make the decisions and commitments by November 1? And, yeah. you know, those are challenges that I think counselors on both sides of the process are thinking about and weighing. And it is something that has been talked about a lot at conferences. I've gone to 3 conferences this spring, and mm-hmm. and that topic has come up
yeah,
at all 3. You know, what's what do we do on the secondary side to deal with this, basically this moving up of the calendar, the timeline, the acceleration of it? What it has meant for many of us is that instead of starting the process with students in earnest in the second half of junior year, we're really, to be honest, we're really moving that now into the sophomore year, where no, we're not, you know, doing all kinds of things, but you know, we do have to start talking about, you know, what are you doing with your summers? What are you doing with standardized tests? Are you thinking about those? Do you have a timeline? Those kinds of things. And you know, you have to actively take action steps that early. So one of the questions that comes up for us is, okay, if we find some schools that are offer early decision too, do we use the same kind of, I'm going to go for the most aspirational school, or do we go with a school that is absolutely fantastic in what I want to study, is really competitive, but offers me a little bit of an advantage if I do early decision and early decision too. So we had some students use that philosophy where they said, okay, I'm going to go to this place that has a fantastic program, and I know they want me. And they were successful. Others went for another school that has that, you know, really low single digit acceptance rate. And more times than not, that didn't work out for them.
Here is Tyler Sant, head of college counseling at Atlanta International School in Georgia, talking about the majors students applied for this year.
We see ongoing interest and growing interest in STEM fields. I think, you know, kids and families, certainly in this generation of college applicants, are hearing the message that those pre-professional areas are the most secure, safe, you know, for long-term kind of job prospects. And a lot more families that are thinking about the financial return on college investment based on how much the cost of tuition continues to go up. And so, you know, there's a drive towards engineering and business and the sciences. In this class, though, and I pulled these numbers recently, and I think there's some really cool stories of kids. You know, my favorite thing to look at when we see what kids want to study is how it connects to some of the things they might have been exposed to in our school that they wouldn't have known about otherwise. Things where it's like, oh, this kid discovered a passion and gets, you know, the things that you talk about all the time with college students on the podcast of following those passions in places that you're not sure where they're going to lead. I think for a lot of kids that can really begin in high school. So beyond the kind of business, engineering, computer science, we've seen growing interest in things like horticulture that stems from also a link to like environmental science and sustainability that kids get exposed to here. I think that's pretty cool. Animation, we still see good interest in the visual arts. Animation, design, studio art. And then we've seen a nice track of kids who are maybe interested in business, but also maybe interested in kind of more of a social component to that. So kids who are studying things like quantitative social science or behavioral economics that have a real kind of leaning towards wanting to, you know, not just work in business and create revenue, but to do things that can have a broad impact in the world. It is interesting to see, and I don't think this is unique to our school, though it's certainly a huge part of our school mission and this place. I'm really encouraged by the number of kids who see all the things that we're anticipating for a difficult 10, 15, 20 years around climate and political conflict and some of these big strains on resources that kids seem, at least the kids that I am interacting with here, they seem really aware of that and interested in doing things that can make a difference. And they want to lead in those spaces that might help us sort some of that out. And so I think that that's been really heartening to see, the number of kids who don't just look at college as like, you know, the means to an end, but they see it as a means to an end potentially, but not in a strictly individualistic sense, but in trying to have a broader impact in the world. And I think that's, we need that.
Here is Bill Hancock, Senior Associate Dean of College Counseling at Cranbrook Kingswood Upper School in Michigan, talking about majors that students applied to this year.
A lot of business and a lot of STEM oriented. So and I would throw data science into that, into the STEMy fields. So, but you know, I saw that as one of your seed questions, and you know, we have a good number that are doing science or science research or engineering. But a lot of them are thinking in ways of connecting several majors rather than just, I'm going to go study biology. I'm going to go study neuroscience. I'm going to go study cybersecurity, or I'm going to study the ethics of AI. You know, so they're looking for ways of bringing technology and science and the new knowledge that comes from that, and they're interested in how that influences or impacts society. So I actually did have several kids in just my group of kids that I work with thinking about sociology, but what they're thinking about again is how does all this advancement in science, computing and research, how does that impact society, you know, the various groups within society, and how society treats people. And so I think honestly that's really hopeful.
No, I agree. I mean, that's definitely a trend, a lot of cross-disciplinary stuff.
Well, but you and I both know that that's also the way the world works.
Yeah.
You know, that we don't go and graduate with our chemistry degree and then just go and sit in a cubicle and do chemistry lab. You know, it's about working in teams and across disciplines and seeing connections. And so I think that that's one of those soft skills, if you will, that employers really want. And I think that that's also something that higher education is tuning into and figuring out how to, you know, take the kid who is a terrific mathematician but also likes to write, you know, and figure out how that child can, you know, thrive in a business world or as an engineer.
Here is Tyler Sant, head of college counseling at Atlanta International School in Georgia, talking about scholarships this year.
I was really pleasantly surprised with how competitive our particular senior class was for some of these big merit scholarships and foundation-based scholarships. We have a Coca-Cola scholar this year and a Morehead Cain scholar, and had a student offered the Cornelius Vanderbilt scholarship, and students who competed for the Robertson and the Jefferson through initial reviews into second rounds of that. So those tend to be like really, really difficult to plan for, to navigate. And I was obviously thrilled with how our kids did it. Some of those kind of big, important and financially significant scholarship opportunities.
Here is Colleen Coppes, College and Career Coordinator at Dowling Catholic High School, Des Moines, Iowa, talking about scholarships in her school.
So we always compare kind of the total amount of scholarships or aid received for our students, and we survey them each year. And we actually increased our scholarship amount, like a total by about $1.5 million. So I did see an uptick. It was great to see an uptick of opportunities for our students, really heavily at the institution level for scholarships. I did see less students applying for like local scholarships, but they did a really good job of applying for institutional scholarships this year.
Here is Sean Kennedy, co-director of college counseling at Ravenscroft High School, Raleigh, North Carolina, talking about advice for upcoming seniors.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, those three big things that I mentioned really about sort of the angst in the, you know, the counseling and university admissions community about the Supreme Court decision, the FAFSA and the digital SAT. Obviously for students that are applying next year, the digital SAT is not something they have to wrestle with, but the Supreme Court decisions that will be, you know, supposed to be forthcoming by June 30th could have a very significant impact on race conscious admissions. So that's a very much a stay tuned, pay attention to what colleges are saying as the summer progresses. I think the FAFSA being the opening of the application period being delayed to December is really a kind of sleeping giant in families where that it might be used to applying in early October and beginning to get that information and understanding what they're at this time, the expected family contribution is, even that terminology is going away. So the deadline is later, the terms are changing, the methodology is changing. And so I think families that may have students in college right now filing for financial aid every year, they will see a difference for upcoming children that are applying going forward. So I think the use of things like net price calculators on university admission websites and reaching out to the universities about how to understand and estimate costs are going to be essential, because you won't have the benefit of the FAFSA information until into the winter, which will be much later.
Got it.
Here is Tom Stepkowski, counselor at West Hill High School in Connecticut, sharing his advice for upcoming seniors.
My advice to any counselor out there is just to, you know, lay it out to the person and just tell them their odds and just say they're not in your favor, but it doesn't mean you can't try, and just understand it's really good. One part of me, I feel bad when a student does not get into their desired school, but then the other part of me says, you know what, there are a ton of other schools out there that we really should be looking at that we're not looking at. And it makes students go in different directions and research other schools and smaller schools. You know, it becomes better, I think, in the long run. Not probably what a student wants to hear from their counselor,
right?
But it's you have to tell them the truth, right?
Hi again. Hope you enjoyed this takeaways episode. High school seniors and parents should pay special attention to the advice section and figure out how it applies to them. Also, take a look at my newsletter at almamatters.substack.com. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode today and all our previous ones. Transcripts for this podcast and previous podcasts are on almamatters.io/podcasts. To stay connected with us, subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, or visit anchor.fm/almamatters to stay connected. Till we meet again, take care and be safe. Thank you.
College Matters.
Alma Matters.